Hello and welcome to the Stretch Podcast. I am your host, Lebo Bule. The Stretch Podcast is a space where I share my thoughts on matters of personal transformation, emotional well-being, and spiritual growth. My teachings are largely based on what I've learned over the years, what I've read, what I've observed, and my very own personal experiences. The podcast is also a space where I have conversations with people whose work and life experiences has inspired me and helped me grow tremendously. People who are not only experts in their fields, but have open hearts, generous spirits, and they are teachers in their own rights. People who I call perpetual students of life. Here's another episode of the Stretch Podcast.
Welcome to the Stretch Podcast, a listening experience for self-improvers and stretchers looking to master life.
Hello, Dumelang guys, Dumelang men. You know what a devastating week we had. What a devastating week we had in the world, in Minnesota, in America. What a devastating week it has been for black people in the world, black men in particular. The issue of race relations and racism and segregation and white supremacy has just been in my head and in my heart the entire week. So much so that, I mean, I was just exhausting plus one. I was exhausting Wonga every night, you know, talking about identity politics, talking about slavery, talking about colonialism, talking about apartheid, talking about just the plight of black men, you know. It's just been very, very hard for me. I even wrote an article on my newsletter. If you receive my newsletter, if you've subscribed to my newsletter, you'd have seen my article titled Black Men. I wrote about some of my thoughts on Instagram and on my Facebook page. I wrote some of my thoughts on my Facebook profile, my personal one. I even did a poll on Friday asking, basically on my stories, asking people if they ever think racism will ever end. And it's you can just guess. I mean, you can just guess. It's devastating results. Where almost 67% are saying no. And that is very sad. You know, it's very sad. As someone who's just an optimist, you know, I'm an optimist and I'm a centrist. You know, my political ideologies are very centrist. And I'm laughing because, you know, centrist politics are very, very dicey. Nobody likes us really, you know, because we tend to just want to see things both sides. And I've not always been a centrist. I've been left. I'm center left, you know. I'm left but center, if you know what I'm trying to say. But I haven't always been like that. I've always sort of been on the left. And then as I grow in understanding, also in age, as people say, you soften. I don't think I'm softening. I think I'm deepening and I'm grasping things deeper. So as someone who's centrist, it is natural for me to just want to go on the other side of the coin and just want to see what's going on with white people. And I know to other people it might seem like such a futile and infuriating exercise, but I do that. I belonged, because I since left, and I'm not going to mention the person's name because he's quite famous and he's quite a well-known podcaster. I was part of his group on Facebook, and I was watching throughout the week, watching with great interest to see what the members of the group are going to say about George Floyd or about Black Lives Matter or about Blackout Tuesday. And it's a predominantly white group, and it's not only white, it is predominantly American. And there was nothing until on Wednesday, one white lady, and you could just tell from the tone in her text, because, you know, some of us can pick up a tone, or rather, sometimes you can pick up a tone, you can pick up tension. And she started her sentence with, "I don't mean to be negative or bring negativity, but I'm devastated, or I'm shamed. No, she didn't use the word devastated. It's me that used the word devastated, because that's how I feel. It's just a devastating week. And she mentioned that she starts with saying, I don't want to bring negativity, or I don't want to be negative, but the issue in Minnesota. I mean, imagine. It's a gigantic issue in the world. And you want to start your sentence with, I don't want to be negative. And at the same time, I found myself feeling sympathy towards her, because she's the only one. Because trust me, I scrolled that wall. I scrolled that group just trying to find, maybe I missed a post or something. Because you know, in groups, especially big groups, you might miss a post. I didn't. There wasn't anything. People were posting about their usual content, because that group is based on the content of the podcaster. So we, and to be fair to the podcaster, he does not participate much in the group. He shares now and again, but whenever he shares the latest episode of the podcast, but he doesn't really engage the group. So the group is for the fans and the followers of the podcast. So to be fair to him, and also he spoke out vehemently, and he spoke out on his Facebook and on his Twitter and on his Instagram about the entire issue very passionately, very believable as well, but not in the group. And so I don't know how I feel about him not talking in the group. But the point is, that lady, in her own fear and whatever it is that white people feel about these things, tried. And I found myself sympathizing with her in a way. You know, the thing is this, guys, whether we like it or not, our relationship with white people is a very, very complicated one. We have a very complex relationship with white people. And the first complexity is that white people and black people are human, you know, and oh my God, guys, if I sound like I'm all over the place, it's because this week was like that for me. It was just hectic for me. But in any case, let me finish that story. She posted, and all she got in terms of comments were hearts. You know, it was emojis, little hearts, you know, the hugging emojis, you know, the gifs of and little hashtags, you know, some trying hashtag BL, Black Lives Matter, hashtag Blackout. You know, nothing comprehensive came out of that. And I couldn't, in my right mind, stay in that group. There was no way I was going to write a post or challenge them. For starters, I hardly ever comment, I hardly ever post. I'm just there as an observer, just really consuming the content there. And I was not about to bring my energies even lower, trying to argue with people who don't see things the way other people see them. People who, for whatever reasons, are stuck in their own shame and guilt and all sorts of things that white people feel around this matter. So yeah, the week was intense, my friends. It was, like I say, there is no other word for me to describe it except to say it was just a devastating week. But at the same time, I want to also say that George Floyd physically was a big guy. I don't know if you guys saw his pictures, you know, not that devastating picture of him being pinned down, of his neck being pinned by that knee. The metaphor of and the symbolism of that knee on the neck. Oh, my word. But anyway, he's a big guy physically, and I feel that metaphorically, his spirit is also that huge. He has such a huge spirit that he moved us. He literally moved. His spirit is moving the world, because what's happening in America, those protests, I don't know if you watched TV or you follow whatever, you follow the news, those massive numbers of people who risked their lives getting out with or without masks. But the point is, we are under, there's a pandemic going on. The spirit of George Floyd decided that with or without COVID, this is going to happen. It moved people from Minnesota, Minneapolis, the city, very big city in Minnesota, LA, New York, and I think parts of course, Chicago, all walking out and saying enough is enough. And I know protesting is very energetic, and it gains momentum. The Me Too movement was just as big. But there's something interesting about this one that says to me, something is changing. Something in the air is changing. And so in as much as it is painful that George Floyd lost his life and he couldn't breathe, but somehow I think his death is going to actually make a lot of young men, both in America and in the world, black men, to breathe again. So yeah, that's what's on my mind as I open today's episode. Hence, there isn't a lot of giggles because I think this is a serious matter. This hit home for me, you know, and there are things that are not literally not laughing matters. With that said, let us swiftly move into today's episode. What do I have as far as housekeeping is concerned? Not much, except for the fact that the special, the Alone special, two books, and you get a Stretch journal free. You buy two books of any Alone, either Alone 1 and Alone 2, or both Alone 1s or both Alone 2s. As long as it's two books, you get a Stretch journal free. How do you do it? On my site, you go to lebupule.co.za, www.lebupule.co.za, go to books, and you buy. Very seamless exercise. It's a click, 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 click. Soon as you buy, information gets to Thuli. Thuli contacts you via email, and you then she lets you know when you will likely to receive the books, which should be about a week, you know, if, you know, to be fair, about 5 to 7 days. You know, especially now that we are on level 3. If there wasn't level 3, it would take about 2 days. But let's just give it 7 days, and then you'll get your books and the journal. The second thing is subscribe to the newsletter. We are already on issue 9, and I wrote a very hard-hitting, I think, piece on George Floyd in my latest installment. Different from what you saw on social media. Like I say, the newsletter audience gets a different feel and they get a bit of my heart, a little bit more of my heart. And also, if you are a subscriber to the newsletter, you will get some of the things that I am promoting first before they hit the socials. Things like joining the Stretch School, the latest on what I have, my collaborations with other teachers, Zoom. There's going to be quite a few Zoom things that we do, so do subscribe. The stats are looking good. We had a team meeting, and it's looking good. You are subscribing, and you are, more importantly, you are actually opening those newsletters and reading them. And I promise you, I will never ever spam you. I hate being spammed by newsletters, and so I will never do that. And the other good news is that we still haven't had an unsubscriber yet. So, see? It's looking good. So please subscribe, and your information is safe with me. So that's it as far as housekeeping is concerned. Now, my friends, let me tell you about today's guest, Lerato. To me, she's Lerato Gayise. And why I say Lerato Gayise, because that's the name I knew when I met her for the first time on Facebook many, many years ago. She was one of my friends and followers, and we met, I think, in 2016. She had attended one of my events, and then later we met again over lunch, and she just treated me to a beautiful lunch in Sandton, and then she jetted off to Ghana to do her thing. She's just an amazing spirit with a lot of incredible energy, very, very wise for her age, a typical storyteller. If you are her fan on Facebook, you know what I'm talking about. And I'm sure you already have a smile on your face because you know that you are in for a treat because of how candid and how giving she is and how generous of spirit she has. So the episode is going to actually show you a different part of her depth, because she's very deep as well. Now, I was looking for her profile so I can quickly read it. It's quite long, but she did give me permission to sort of summarize it. Let me do that. Okay, so Lerato Charlotte Letsoso. Lerato Charlotte Letsoso. Wait, guys. Let me find. I'm actually reading the wrong thing here. Hold on. I'm reading. Okay. There we go. I'm going to just highlight the important things because the profile is quite long, but we will post it as it is on the show notes. So, Lerato Charlotte Letsoso, also known as Rato, is a media personality with 18 years experience on stage performance and productions. Her diversity shines through her evident roles as news anchor, content producer, and writer. This media personality has experience in TV, radio, print, and digital media platforms. She was a host for the Nigeria Community Excellence Awards, South Africa 2019. Okay, so basically, Nigeria Community Excellence Awards, South Africa 2019. There's a part that I really just want to touch on. She's also an entrepreneur. She now handles her recent entrepreneurial role as MD of Lerato Letsoso Productions, LPTY LTD, which produced her latest book, or rather her first, it's a debut book, A Niger Saudi Affair, which made it on top 100 bestseller status on Amazon for African literature within just 1 month of publishing. Ezandleni! She's also a musician. We will play one of her songs as we close the episode today. She sings incredibly. She's also a storyteller, as you guys know, in particular those of you who follow her on social media. She tells endless stories. It's a beautiful profile. She's done very, very well for herself. And in the conversation, ooh, my word, we start with obviously the George Floyd issue. We delve deeper into the metaphor of that knee on that neck. She gives her inputs and her insights on that. Then we move to Africa and Africans, South Africans, how we are compared to other African brothers and sisters. And she opens my eyes to say that this whole thing of South Africans sort of being almost ignorant is not unique to us. Other African people are also like that. It's just that with South Africans, we have this other thing of actually not moving. We don't travel. We're very much like Americans. We then talk in detail about her book, you know, what the book is about, and I just saw the affair, which is basically why I invited her to the podcast, you know, because I wanted to just for her to just talk about the book, because it's very, very interesting. She talks about relationships between different cultures, African, you know, Nigerians versus South Africans, ganjalo, which is very interesting to me because it's something that happens, but we don't really talk about it, you know. So that's why I invited her. We talk about her entrepreneurial journey, her music. I knew that her fans will not like me if we don't talk about her social media behavior. She's candid. She's open. I mean, Lerato just, I watch her wall sometimes and just die of both laughter and cringing because I'm like, oh my word, are you serious? So without further ado, I give you Lerato. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Stretch Podcast.
Yo, Lerato, you know, thank you so much for joining me for this conversation. When I was thinking about doing this thing with you, I was trying to remember the last time I saw you live, like physically, face to face. And if my memory serves me well, it must have been 2016. We were sitting at Tasha's in Sandton. You were, yeah. It was your treat. I think you were hosting me. And you still worked for TV. Only famous. Is that what you remember as well? Was that the last time
for you.
That was definitely the last time for me. Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Because I remember shortly after that, that's when I packed up and left for Ghana. And we've never physically met since then.
Since then. The first time it was at one of my folk gatherings. You remember back in the days? Yes. When I used to gather people.
That because that was my first opportunity of getting your first offering.
Yeah.
Alone. I was able to meet this house label that I've always been following on Facebook, finally, you know.
Yeah.
And indeed, she was exactly how I imagined she would be.
If not me. Okay. You know,
some people have a social media personality and then they've got their...
yeah, the real one.
When you are us level through and through, you know.
Yeah, I actually think I'm friendlier in real life. Sometimes too friendly, which some people unfortunately sort of, you know, abuse that. But anyway, we are not talking about me today. First of all, before we even get into, because we have a lot to cover. Congratulations, Lerato. Congratulations on everything that you are doing. You know, I don't know if you know anything about energies, but you do. I know you do. Your energy and your light is shining so bright. I mean, you are unignorable. Apart from the fact that you wrote a book and you've started your production company, your overall being, your energy shines through on those social media. And I knew I have to talk to her because you've released a book and I really want to punt it. And also that you have entered, you know, entrepreneurship. But also, even if you didn't have those things, I think based on the projection of your energy online, I would have wanted to have a conversation with you. So congratulations are in order. Congratulations on your book and your work going forward. But honestly, Lerato, you know, I cannot in my right mind start anything with you, any conversation with you without talking about George Floyd. It's a Wednesday today as we're having this conversation. Mm-hmm. Yesterday was Blackout Tuesday. I have not been well, and I know you have not been well. We have not been sleeping. What's on your mind around the entire thing, you know, the entire police brutality in America, racism in America, Black Lives Matter, the entire shebang? Where are you? What's in your heart and mind?
When I was little, you know, for me, I think the atmosphere, like you've said, you're not okay, you're not well. You know we're close to America, but you say you're not well. You know, and some people I've been seeing, even with the debates on social media, are trying to figure out why are people who are so far from America feeling affected, you know. I guess those are people that just don't comprehend. But sometimes people like you and I, you know, we're sensitive, you know, we look at things beyond the physical, you know. We're very metamorphoric and figurative in our ways. And so I purely understand where you come from. As for me, I've been disrupted and, you know, and I couldn't help but to realize that there's an uprising in the atmosphere, you know. So all these events that are happening, including this George Floyd's incident, it's just part of that uprising, you know. And I think it's about time, you know. If you really look deep, it's sad and it's very tragic what happened to George Floyd. And let me also not ignore the fact that what happened to him is not necessarily unique to him. He is definitely not the first Black American to suffer in the hands of police brutality, more especially a white a policeman for that matter. But if you look at the move that his death has come out with, is one of the most significant moves, you know. So we by no means, you know, downplay all the other lives that have died or have been affected by racism or police brutality. You know, when we say George Floyd, we're not saying Hore, the other lives don't matter.
Yes,
and
yes.
I really want to make emphasis to this. However, we are saying George Floyd because we realize that with his particular incident, it really stirred up, you know, an uprising like we've never seen before in America, where, you know, the America that we know, according to how the media usually display to us, where you see people on the streets protesting violently,
yes,
you know, being fed up, you know. You know, and causing such havoc, and for other countries to also want to join in and stand with them using this hashtag, yeah, I can't breathe. You know, and when you sit down and you look at it, you realize, Hore, no man, this thing it's more than what the eye meets. You know, if you figuratively look at it. And the circumstances around George Floyd's death, you realize, Hore, according to the autopsy that was given yesterday, apparently his death is linked to the fact that, you know, Aguirre, the policeman sort of choked him with his knee on the neck. You know, and when you look at that, is that the neck is considered by many spiritual disciplines as the gateway or the bridge to the spiritual world through which the breath must pass.
Yep.
You know, and so it's a spiritual gateway. You know, so it's no coincidence that, you know, that the most profound words taken out from George's experience are, I can't breathe.
The matter, I mean, geez, the entire the symbolism of the entire scene for me, as I was telling you yesterday, is too profound. You know, the knee for me represents the entire system of white supremacy, capitalism, patriarchy, all these things that came with these people. And the neck, I didn't even think of the spiritual metaphor of it. And thank you for bringing that as a bridge, because it is connecting the body and the spirit, if you think about it.
Yeah, it the conjoins. Head,
yes, it conjoins
the higher things in men. Yeah, the higher things in men, I agree, are of the head.
Of course, so the third eye like and the crown.
Passage, you know? So really what you are now describing as the knee, and when you put into consideration the metaphor or the symbolism of the neck, which signifies that which conjoins the higher things in men, which are of the head, you know, that communing passage, that spiritual gateway. And you talk about the knee, the way you've described it, Hore, it's a what? An oppression,
yeah.
The system.
It's the entire system, and the knees.
What does this denote? You know, and you talk about white supremacy. I like that you went there. You know, because it denotes the falsities. You know, of white supremacy. Because I'm one of those person who believe, Hore, there is no such thing as supremacy in whiteness. It's a false doctrine, you know, and perhaps we have been dislocated from this truth for a very long time. And now it's about time, hence the uprising, you know. So we needed this incident of George Floyd to happen. We needed the gateway to be unblocked. We needed George Floyd to stop breathing so that we can start breathing and start reconnecting to our spiritual gateway, to start realizing the truth that actually, so whites are not supreme. You know, we are not an inferior people. You know, so now we need to internalize this. You know, yes, we are mourning George Floyd's death. It's all good, you know. But after the mourning, what happens, you know, beyond the hashtag of I can't breathe?
Yeah.
What do we need to do to start breathing? We need to heal. We need to tell ourselves the truth, you know. But now, how do we do that? before we start organizing, collaborating, loving, sharing, creating what we crave, you know, we need to heal. We can't do those things without healing, but we need to reconnect, you know, with the land. We need to reconcile with the womb. We need to restore the neck, you know, and when we've done these things, then we can inevitably sort out every other thing, including the system. We cannot address some of these inequalities and some of these, you know, issues that we have as a people when we have not reconnected with the land, when we have not reconciled with the womb, when we have not restored the neck, because everything else outside of these is not organic. It's not a permanent healing. It's false.
Rato, yo, are killing me. Goosebumps all over. You know, I have to take, so reconnecting with the land, reclaiming our voices, obviously based on the neck metaphor, reconnecting with the womb. Not so long ago, I think last week, we were celebrating or commemorating what is known as Africa Day. And I found myself unable to say anything. I mean, I pride myself of being wordy and really just deep and able to articulate. But I couldn't find anything to say to talk about Africa Day. My post was like, I don't know what to say. I feel so disconnected. And, you know, the comments that followed were predominantly, obviously, from South African followers of mine, also, you know, sharing the same sentiments. And it got me thinking about us South Africans and our disconnect. And I'm not saying everybody, I know I'm generalizing, but for generally speaking, South Africans are somehow disconnected from the entire continent. And why do you think that is? And why I'm asking you specifically is because not so long ago, you went and you lived in Ghana, and your book is based on an inter-country relationship with the Nigerian and South Africans. So I want you to just share, based on what you know and what you've experienced living in another country, what is it about us South Africans vis-a-vis other our brothers and sisters in Africa? I hope I'm making sense.
No, you definitely are making sense. You see, that's the perception, but it's not really unique to South Africa. That's what a lot of people don't know.
Okay.
It is not unique to South Africa at all.
What, the disconnect?
Outside of the African country, yes. Outside of the African context, the Americans are worse. they are the most ignorant and disconnected people from the rest of the world.
I know that.
Some of the serious questions for you. Oh, we didn't know this happens in Africa, you know? Some of the things you know, they are so obvious, you know? But let's bring it back on the continent. The South African, Africans, it's actually really not unique to South Africa. We say outside, that's what I've realized. Even though I haven't lived in many places, I've been opportunity to travel to different places and encounter people from different parts of Africa. And I will tell you for a fact that a lot of people that have never been exposed or rather experienced life outside of a country usually have that issue of having disconnected. They cannot resonate with what's happening outside. But the thing is that a lot of other African countries have larger groups of people that usually travel outside of the country.
Aha, that's where I was gonna go. Yeah.
We don't move. In comparison to other African nationals, South Africans, in majority, yes, we have a handful of South Africans that work outside or travel outside for their holidays. But in actual fact, it's not really culturally part of who we are. you know, and so because the other countries are more likely to live outside, work outside, or travel outside for holiday, then it gives them a little bit of a richer experience, and it exposes them to the ways of other people who are different from them, you know. And a typical South African that has never been you know, exposed to someone who is non-South African, for instance, will definitely not be able to connect with the issues of the, that person or that country, you know. And I mean, it's so terrible that even in South Africa, in as much as we've got different nationals living in South Africa, South Africans are not likely to want to socially, you know, how do you say, integrate? People who are non-South African. So then we also rob ourselves then experience, you know, because sometimes even if you don't travel, but at least you've got someone, you've got access to somebody who is not like you, you are likely to learn a few things from that person. But if you look at our social setups, those are also not, you know, integrated. So the cohesion lacks somewhere. You'll find that Xhosa people who are living in Midrand would rather we can spend time with other Xhosa people.
Yes.
You know, the Tsonga people from Limpopo would rather spend their free time together somewhere. You know, the Joburgers would rather spend their time together somewhere, you know. So you've got the thing where we are too we're too careful with our space in terms of how we interact with others socially. And I think that robs us then from getting to learn and know what or be in touch or connect with what's happening. And also, if you look at our media and what we are exposed to in terms of our playlists on our radios, the shows that we watch on TV, you'll find our kids are more likely to connect with America than to connect with another African country, because in Jay, what we are being fed is in terms of a different experience is foreign. You know, it's not African. Even Kodikolong, our syllabus, you know, does not teach us African history, for instance. You know, our kids don't know so many people. Our kids don't know who Ya Asantewa is. Our kids don't know who Nandi was. Our kids don't know who Nzinga was, you know, but they are more likely to know who Einstein was.
And Aristotle and Socrates, the Greek mythologists.
So because of that, obviously, then it's only, I mean, it's expected that we will then have that disconnect.
It's deep. It's not just on the surface. And then also add to that the segregation that apartheid brought to a Basutu ka kwa, Batswana ka kwa. It even went as far as the townships themselves, you know, Soweto, inali koma Zulu, koma Sutung, Boshawela, Lebosnawani, ki koma Shangani. It's deep. So I get it. So this is far reaching, hence your a session where we need to reconnect back to who we truly are.
And reconnection is going to be expensive, Lebo. It's going to cost a lot, because just from the traveling alone, do you know that traveling within the African continent is more expensive? Me purchasing a flight ticket to London would be almost equivalent, the same price to when I purchase a ticket to Ghana from South Africa. You are likely to afford a holiday to Thailand than to afford a holiday to another African country.
Thailand is hot now. Everyone goes to Thailand for the fact that it's
But there's many of them. There's Bali, there's so many of them. But what I'm saying is, even the way our things are set up, they don't enable someone who doesn't have luxuries to want to even travel, because the cost on its own is a lot. And then let's assume you want to have another option aside traveling. Our schools don't create those platforms for our children. Our social culture, our media, how many programs do you know of that you know, that display other African content that is not South African?
Not many. Exactly. Yeah. So,
okay, we don't have those platforms. We don't. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a stula one. This is a big one. And I would like for our generation, by our generation, I mean us, who were born in the 70s, 60s, 80s, like Lorna, to probably begin something. And in a small way, we sort of have. This podcast is one of those ways to bring such conversations. Now,
and I think social media has also helped Auslebi in a way, because you get to go on Twitter, for instance, and you see engagement between, let me use the recent one. There's this girl, excuse me for forgetting her name, but she's up and happening right now. She's been doing skits, you know, these comedy skits. She's from Kenya.
Yeah.
You know, and it's been interesting to follow her wave, because I see even South Africans that have never been to Kenya, that don't know Swahili and whatever, you know, developing interest in Kenya and Swahili because of this particular girl. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't have known about her hadn't she been on social media and her video clips and her skits, you know, trending, you know. So I think social media is also one of the ways that are going to assist us in connecting, you know, with other Africans, as long as we don't keep our communities as in, this is Black Twitter, or this is South African Twitter, that's Nigeria Twitter, that's Kenya Twitter. When we do, I've also noticed with your podcast series, I mean, you've been interviewing people who are also not in the country. So, you know, when we have such platforms, YouTube and all that, then yeah, we're going somewhere. In terms of our school systems and everything, we have a long way to go. But I usually encourage parents, I say, you know, take it upon yourself. Teach your children.
Your kids, teach your children, yeah.
Home, you know, you don't have to wait for the school or the government or whoever to teach your child. Teach them, you know, empower yourself so that you can empower your kids. And then we take it from there. Hopefully we get to a level where we are like Finland, where we can scrape out the entire subjects, you know, and just create our own way of educating.
Yeah, that's where we should go, actually. That's where we should go. You start your school, I start mine. One day we collaborate and we have an institution, Lebona Lady Farm and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Hence I'm saying our generation has to at least leave something behind. But this is a conversation.
We're doing the most that we can with what we have, where we are, you know?
Yeah. Start where you are.
Yeah, we start where we are, but we are hoping that we will be able to create that ripple effect. You know, I remember one of my sons, my 8-year-old, one day had an oral, you know, about someone they want to meet. And then another one was about somebody who was doing great. And all the suggestions or ideas that his teacher shared with them in class, all of them were non-African names, you know. And I said to him, no, we are going to pick an African person for you. And then he says to me, but mommy, the teacher gave us some examples and he didn't mention these names that you're mentioning. And then I said to him, no, your teacher probably doesn't know these people, you know, because these are not people that they are like.
Not in his radar. It's not in his radar screen.
So now, yeah. So I said, now you are going into class. That 5 minutes that you are going to have to make your presentation, you are going to not just teach your class mates, but you're also going to teach your teacher. Mm-hmm. And indeed, you know, after the second one, I think the first time he spoke about Lebo Moraki, yeah, you know, the one of the Lion King.
Yes.
And the second time he spoke about
Lebo M. Oh, Lebo M, yes.
Yeah, the second time he spoke about Aliko Dangote, the Nigerian businessman. Mm. And after the second one, he came back to me and he said to me, mommy, my teacher even said to me, he didn't even know about Eluko Dangote.
Yeah. And of course, I said, he doesn't. Exactly,
Yeah, I was like, of course, my baby, and we don't expect them to know, you know, but now we have to change that. We have to use the spaces that we have to educate those around us. And that's why when you have orals or whatever opportunity, I try for you to have content that will be African, you know. So I've already started with my kids. In fact, when it's school holidays, we have our own school at home. And no, I don't keep them updated with the school curriculum. I give them
your curriculum.
Yeah, I give them Black History lessons, you know. right now he's excited. He's waiting for an opportunity where he can talk about Queenia Asantewa. And his friends that have no idea who Queenia Asantewa was. And listening to him having to narrate the story about Queenia Asantewa and how she led her fellow people for the Golden Stool gaining. And everybody's just amazed for, where do you get this? Because these are not things that we are likely to read. But you see, we need to do this and we have to start somewhere. You know, so we are doing this for them so that they should know, grow up knowing these things. Mm-hmm. It's just like the Africa Day that you're talking about. It's not even Africa Day. It's Africa Liberation Day. You know, yes. So I don't know what we did to Africa Day. And the essence of what it was for. It started in Ghana, funny enough.
Interesting. Hey, this Ghana. And I want to visit Ghana. But anyway, continue.
It all started in Ghana with, I think you will know, the one of the former presidents, Kwame Nkrumah. And there was another African president who was part of this discussion when they came up with the Africa Liberation Day. Mm. You know, it was never about us wearing African prints and posing photos.
And, you know, and so Instagram.
We have moved so far away from the original agenda of what Africa Liberation Day was about. But yeah. I don't want to do that. So I don't blame you for not knowing what to have shared that day, because now from what I know of you, you are a very organic and authentic person. You know, you wouldn't likely want to come out just to be relevant and
say nahana se ke ya pere ke shapile snape mole shapile hashtag.
You wouldn't want to just say stuff out of relevance just because ke Africa Day, therefore I must say something so that everybody can know. I was living with something. You are not those people. You are very authentic person, and so I don't blame you for expressing yourself and saying, to be honest, I had no idea, you know. And you genuinely shared, you know, because I wouldn't expect anything less from you. And another thing is, I know you are a very sensitive person spiritually. You are so in touch with what is happening around you, and I will tell you for a fact that a lot of people who are like you felt the same way. Yes. You are not the only one. You know, so it's more like the essence of what Africa Liberation Day was about. It's not even there anymore. Mm-mm. You know, so yeah.
But anyway, when we are getting deep into this, and the purpose of the podcast or this episode is to actually talk about your work, starting with a Niger-Saudi affair. But before you even talk about it, let me just confess. I bought the book, and it, for whatever reason, is not downloading on my Kindle. So I haven't read it, and I didn't want to postpone again because I've been desperate to talk to you. So I haven't read it. So I'm not going to ask you anything about it. I'm going to allow you to just share where you were coming from with it, because it's very catchy. I love it. You see, the funny part about it is that relationships between South Africans and Nigerians or the DRC or, you know, other African countries happen. But it's funny that we hardly ever talk about them. In fact, it's frowned upon somehow. It's just a weird situation. So that's why I want to read it, because I want to hear what you had to say. I'm also a bit sad, can I just confess, that it's a novel. I wish it was a memoir. I don't know, you strike me as a memoirist, as someone who...
Listen, you're not wrong. You're not wrong, because I come from an influence of people like Bessie Head.
Yes.
I have a combination of, and she's one of the women that really inspired me to catch the flame and fall in love with reading, writing, and
yes,
books in general. So I've got a collection of influences there. Bo Zeksumda,
Zeksumda is a legend. Mm.
I've got your Chinua Achebe's, Buchi Emecheta, so it's a combination of people, and remember, this is my debut. For me, it made sense to start off with the fiction and then move towards the memoirs, because I thought it would be rather difficult to come back from memoirs into fiction.
Actually, as a memoirist, as someone who's written two memoirs, for me, it feels very, very natural to move into fiction. In fact, I'm sitting here, I will write Alone Book 3, so that I can just wrap the story up. And then I can tell you now, my next book, after the third book, which, writing a book is a very interesting process, because it feels as though the fiction, the novel, wants to come before the third book, which is fine. I will follow the spirit. But I just want to challenge you a bit to say, no, actually, I think it doesn't matter. I am going to write fiction.
Yes, because the way my story is set up, Auslevo, I really felt like it's not time. But at the same breath, I didn't want to not write at all. Because I felt like my story was still very much busy writing itself. And parts of what was happening are some of the significant things that I would like to have in my memoir.
I see. I got you.
But in the meantime, I didn't want to just not write. I had been writing anyway.
Thank you, I feel
at the right time, like you say, you will be led. I get Luena, you've just said now you'll be led to write, to see whether you do the third after or before the fiction or whatever. Yeah. So the same way, I feel like when it's time, I will know. But definitely not something that I'm purposefully going to stay away from.
No, we do. We need a memoir from you, please. Okay, tell us about the book.
I'll satisfy your craving, Oslo. Don't worry. Anyway, The Affair is a romance novella. It's a love story, an African love story, like you've never read before. Like you say, you've got integrated couples. They've been existing for years. They are there.
They are there. I once had a long relationship with someone from the DRC.
They are there. They exist. So I don't know why we've never had a story about them, like in the African context. We always, when we refer to integrated couples, we always talk about interrace, interracial. We've never really given significance to, integrated couples in the context of, intercontinental, like Pan-African, for instance, So the storyline in this case focuses on integrated relationships, its challenges using the controversial relationship between Nigeria and South Africa. So the Niger is taken from Nigeria and the Southeast taken from South Africa. It's centered around the love affair between these two people, the two main characters. That's Chidi, a Nigerian man of Igbo descent, and Tukizwa, a South African woman of Xhosa descent.
You are so stereotypical. Oh my God.
Yes, and the book consists of 18 very petite chapters. It's not a bulky book. Yeah. And it's structured with, in such a way that the first five chapters are giving you more of a background of the two nations' relationship, addressing some stereotypes, while the rest of the chapters touch on the love story between Chidi and Tukizwa. So you expect a little drama, laughter, some tears for the hopeless romantic.
Which I'm not.
I like what, but yeah, when I forget. So I'll definitely not expect tears from you, but I'm expecting your review when you're done. I am demanding that review. And one of the lady who wrote my foreword for me, in her words, she says, you know, she likes how I courageously take on the difficult and complicated relationship between these two African countries, like two largest economies in Africa, and through a personal love story, which is a way that I had never looked at before, you know. Mm-hmm. And she says that the relationship between the two nations, historical allies and modern day adversaries, has deep implications for the personal relationships of the citizens. Wow. You know, and this is the crux. She believes this is the crux of my novel, you know, how these citizens manage the strong perceptions of each one's nation against the other within the tide of their strong personal relationships, you know. And that's what makes it for an interesting tale. And I think it also makes a very strong case for African unity. Is it really?
It does. That exists?
Does it really exist, you know? So I write this book based on experiences, I mean, as a sister, as a friend, as a daughter. I have been in an integrated relationship before, but I did not limit this book to my personal experience. Otherwise, I would have just written a memoir.
Yeah, that's the beauty of fiction, you see. You can.
I gave it a bit of enrichment with content because I'm uncovering different people's stories.
Yeah.
I gave myself an opportunity to do some research. You know, I got linked up with the Nigerian South Africa community living in South Africa. I've spoken to people that have been in marriages even for more than a decade in those setups. I've heard so many different stories. I've interviewed different people. And it's really funny how the comment, you know, it was just really interesting to see the commonalities, you know, amongst people. Like one of them was the plastic tub that is always decorating in the bathroom.
Yes, the one that has like old soaps, old, you know, things.
The yoga. No, the yoga. It doesn't even have to have old soaps as well. Some of them use it to rinse themselves, they, you know, the bucket system of showering. You know? And then the tap also represents, you know, the food, the you know, when we are meal preps and you pour your soup and your meat in the Tupperware, I get, you would likely put it in the Tupperware and freeze it. But this ice cream, one day your Lerato has a sweet tooth and you feel like, oh, there's ice cream in the fridge. Well, how repair is a goosey. You know, so you get that kind of story, and obviously there are harder topics that are also touched on, but in a very light-hearted manner, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm just appreciating holistically some of the challenges that such a setup, like a relationship setup in this way rather, would have. You know, and I really address the stereotypes, you know, those stereotypes that South African women are only with Nigerian men because of money.
No, that was my exact next question. That part of the stereotype, do you touch on that and the dynamics of money?
Oh, I definitely touch on that. Mm-hmm. And I know it's going to be painful for some people, you know, to read those things, you know, and also that the only South African women who date Nigerians are those prostitutes, you know, give them a hosha, you know, and it's not the case, you know, it's not always the case, you know. So I address those stereotypes in the story. Yeah.
You know, not to give the book away. Do you also go to sex? You know, there's a stereotype of Nigerian men are well hung, or they do it better than South African men, which is apparently part of why South African men really just hate, or hate is a strong word, or just really just don't like this whole Nigerian South Africans.
I touch a little bit on sexuality, but not too much.
Not too much.
Really to it, because I feel like it's a subject on its own.
On its own, but yeah, it's a big topic.
I didn't really touch too much on it. I really remember this was supposed to be a romance novel.
Ah,
so I really
didn't
make it about that. But I did sort of bring in the first five chapters that I spoke of that give us the background. I did touch on some of these stereotypes, and definitely one of the stereotypes mentioned there was a sexuality aspect, especially with the women as well, because we also have Nigerian women who feel that the only advantage we have is because we've got bigger bums. You know, they don't see, they don't think that South African women are any more valuable. You know, they think it's because of our big bums that their brothers come to us, nothing else, you know. So it's a stereotype that's out there, and yeah. They also men.
Yeah.
That hostility. Yeah, Hore, the other ones will say they came for to take our women, what belongs to us. And then there's that hostility from the women, Hore, when our guys get to SA, forget about them, they are gone.
You remind me of a client back in the days when I was doing office furniture in the early 2000s. I had a client, a very, very strong, powerful Nigerian woman, Adeola. I forgot her surname. Adeola, she was an architect by profession and so needed some furniture for their offices. And so I happened to be the supplier. And we became friendly. She was hard. I mean, you can imagine a typical Nigerian woman. Doesn't smile much, but it doesn't mean that she hates you. And I'm used to people being all lovey-dovey and nice. And when we got friendly, we eventually spoke about men. And she was like, you, Lebo, you and your men, you guys treat your men like babies. That's why they will never survive with Nigerian women. And she would go on and on about how weak we are as South African women. And how the weakest of Nigerian men fall for us. That was the premise she was coming from. Wow. Very interesting. So I think it's an interesting book. I can't wait to read it. Yeah. Now
so you just read.
Because I mean, if I ask further, we might as well just do an audio book right here. Now, I want to talk also about, I was saying earlier when we started the conversation that, I mean, you were just bursting into the scenes, you know, and you also now have, you're a musician. Your music is incredible. And thank you for sharing with us. We will play it for the listeners. Oh my God. I was listening with Dawu yesterday and I'm like, listen, this is my friend. And he's like, Mark, you're lying. I'm like, why can't I have a musician as a friend? So tell me about that aspect of your life. You have a production company, Litsoso Productions. What else does it cover? I know you produce your own music, you produce your own books. Is it a publishing as well? Tell us about it a bit.
Yeah, the reason why I just said Lerato Letsoso Productions, I didn't really limit it to a particular production, but everybody knows that I'm in the media landscape. I've always had a fetish for media, so it's media productions, but I didn't want to add media into the
official name.
You know, so and being somebody who was very versatile from before I decided to go the entrepreneur route, I wanted to create one space where I can embody the versatility, being music, dance, writing, you know, all the things that have always been Lerato, you know, and to also afford people who are like me, you know, the platform to know that it's okay to be multifaceted. You know, it's okay to be diverse, and you're allowed to have it all if you want to. You know, and we do that without making you feel like there's anything wrong with you. So I only did when I registered Lerato Letsoso Productions only in August 2019. So I'm still new at this.
So it's a baby.
It's a baby. Even though I've tried other businesses before, but like just because I wanted to do business, you know, it wasn't media. I wasn't true to who I am in delving into entrepreneurship. You know, so it failed. Like I failed countless times, but this time I tried again. But I said no. I want to do something that I know I'm passionate about. A business that is me. You know, that I don't have to step out of. Like I don't have to. How do I say? Perform.
Yeah.
Or I'm a business person. I'm an entrepreneur. You know, it's not a performance. It's who I am. It's me. It's me just bringing in business knowledge to my natural talents and skills, you know, offer that interest to me, you know, and I think that is what has made Lerato Lesotho Production different from any of the other businesses I've tried venturing into in the past. And I think the reason why I threw in the towel those many times was because I was not sincere and I wasn't organic.
Lerato, just to cut you some slack, this thing of coming to who you truly are organically, doing the work that speaks to your heart and soul, has not come easy. It's a meandering. You sort of feel your way through it and you get hurt along the way. You pay like big school fees. I just don't want you to feel as if you were insincere deliberately or inauthentic deliberately. I think for me,
well, it wasn't deliberate. I was excited about those ventures.
Yes, right, true. Me know, too.
But I failed hopelessly.
That's part of it. If you're scared of failure.
About it, you know, but hey, it's part of growth. Like you say, eventually, you life goes on, you know, you grow up. Sometimes I even laugh at myself. What about what was I thinking?
I hate, furniture. Well, not furniture per se, but I hate the whole thing, the way the whole furniture business was set up. But I was young, I didn't know, you know. Now I know, but you know, you look back.
You wanted the Benjamins, you felt very young. Curious, you know, because we've got an idea of what a businesswoman or a business person is supposed to look like, the executive suits,
and high heels.
And also has its own stereotypes, I get.
You
know, we expect when somebody say I'm a business person, we're expecting some executive suits in office somewhere, a Jean Juan, you know. And I think when we start, informing ourselves and arming ourselves, we realize, for a moment, the essence of business is actually just about you enterprising something. You know, there's no point in you having a grand name, having a certificate of business, and you are not, you cannot make profit, or
you're not invoicing.
You understand that is not a business, or understand. So, all these other things that decorate, like having a grand logo and what, if you are not really operating as a business and you are not getting profit or you're not breaking even, you are not a business. No. Simple. You know, so for me, and so even if you can come with a nice business plan, you know, and I think my generation is so focused on the packaging more than the actual business. You know,
is it your generation? I thought it's mine. I thought your generation is better. You were born in the 80s, I guess.
Yeah,
I thought Lonali Bidiri. We have to have an office and you have to wear those high heels and you have to power dress. And I did that. And I love the word you use, Yahor. You have to perform. It's only hitting me now that actually I've just been performing to be a businesswoman. Meanwhile, I'm not. I'm actually not that business savvy. I have a good head. I have a great mind. But the whole boardroom scene and kwai, and I think that's not my scene. I think it has never been, but I didn't know. I didn't know because you're busy performing. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, you've got a point there. So Lerato Lesotho Production is who I am, is what I do. I mean, we host your events. We do offer media strategies. This is outside of publishing and writing, of course, you know, and producing music. And I wish to grow it to a point where I can also start producing films, you know. It's an overall production house that I want to have, you know, that produces stories, because I'm in the business of telling stories.
That's love your hashtag. I love that.
Yeah, that is what I'm about. I'm in the business of telling stories. So of course, I will experiment different mediums of telling the story. The story could be in song. It could be in a book. It could be in a, you know, a film one day, you know, but the crux of the matter is that we're telling a story, you know, and I've always been a storyteller, you know, so the business is of telling stories. Nice. That's basically the summary of what Le Rato Le Zoo Productions is about. And then, of course, just for the corporate element, I do offer, you know, the media strategy services, like I say, it's just an additional service that I add, you know, to the rest of what I offer in the business. But the main crux of the business is telling stories.
I don't know if it was you, but it might have been you after reading Alone One, suggesting that, you know, this book has to be a movie. So yeah, I'm so happy to know Lerato Le Tsoso Productions, so you can turn Alone into a movie. Or some short series, like a 3-part series of some sort.
Yeah, the whole series, yeah, Yanto, I'm talking about series, Aslebu, you're not wrong. I think, I don't know if you've seen what Michelle Obama has done with her book,
Becoming. I watched the documentary after your post, because I saw your post, and it's something that I've been meaning to do, because I read the book, and I was so taken by the book because I read the book out of curiosity. I had always found Michelle Obama very otherworldly, you know, very queen-like, unapproachable, even though she's relatable. I've always found her to be such a mystery that how can such a towering, because also height is an interesting thing. Being given height is also a very spiritual topic for another day. So she's tall, she's towering. She's not approachable, but she's relatable. So I've always just found it to be a mystery. Hence, I wanted to read the book. And I read the book, and it delivered in ways that I could not believe. I fell in love with her instantly. So there's a documentary coming up, and I forgot about it until I saw it on your post. I literally watched it. What's today? Today's Wednesday. I watched it on Sunday. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. Well done. They've done it well. So yeah.
So that for your Alone series, that is exactly the style that I would recommend that you take, not necessarily the film route. You understand? So it should be more of a documentary route.
I see.
But you can have it in series. Alone One, maybe to understand, or you can decide to, you know, with Netflix these days, we've got maybe 6 episodes, like a whole series. So you can have 3 episodes of your 3 different series of Alone.
And
it should be, but I feel because of the content, it should be docu-style, you know, in the manner which Michelle Obama has done hers, but obviously unique to your story. You know, some shots will be shot maybe at Alex, you know, you're revisiting some places, sharing a little bit of having your sisters, for instance, being interviewed, you know, I've seen you doing your book signings, your launch, I've seen you, you know, and just having some of the things as voiceover. You know, your voice, meaning that you're alone as an audio in the background. That's basically the style that they used in the documentary. But when we consult, I will give you a breakdown.
My people will talk to your people.
The style that will suit it perfectly, because now trying to do it into a movie will not do it justice.
Because
the style is Yeah, because of the style.
Thank you for that advice. Send an invoice already. Okay, Loretta, so how is it going though? How are you finding entrepreneurship? I know this is new. How are you finding the entire exercise this time around? Of being an entrepreneur?
You know, I don't know if you saw my post. When was it last 2 weeks when I was so frustrated with some of the day-to-day challenges, and I said, ooh, and they said, start a business, they say, and I shared emojis crying. Ooh, Aslebu, sometimes it can be so challenging, you know, especially when you are like me and you are just the SME, you're starting out and you're still doing a lot of things yourself, you know, you're not yet in a position where you have a strong, solid team in place. You know, but I'm learning to reshape my model as I go along. You know, so far it's helped me to collaborate and it's helped me to outsource some of the things because I understand that I really cannot be jack of all trades and I
can't
simply do everything by myself. So, you know, I don't have to wait until I can afford full-time staff for certain things to happen. So I rather include other entrepreneurs in those respective areas and I pay them for those services just to get the business going. You know, I think there's been more good testimonies than there are bad with Lerato Letso Productions because remember, I've tried other businesses that are not like this. So I had picked up certain things admin-wise from those businesses, which already I knew how to handle with this one. You know, it hasn't, I think I'm fortunate enough that since we officially launched October 2019, I must say so far so good, hey? Really so far so good. And which goes on for me to prove once again that when you really are doing something genuinely, organically, and that's from your heart, it's more likely to respond to your efforts than when you are doing something that is not of you. You know, so I see Lerato Letso Productions responding to most of the efforts that I put in. And it's really rewarding to see that happen. You know, so but that doesn't take away some of the hassles with business, for instance. COVID-19, I mean, I've had a lot of cancellation. There was a book tour that I was supposed to do. There was, you know, a lot of physical activities were involved in the style of or rather the strategy on how I was going to go about the sales and marketing for the book and for the song, you know, and all of those had to be put at a halt because of the pandemic. You know, so we had to remodel and, you know, so some of that has cost me quite a bit because some of the things I had already in advance paid for, you know, and some of the forecasts financially were included, you know. So it really hasn't been easy getting some of these disappointments. But so far, with the adaptation that we're doing, I'm hopeful, you know. I'm hopeful, you know. The good thing about this is that on bad days, even if I beat myself up and I don't get my way, you know, I like the fact that my life right now, I'm in such a space where I don't really feel like alone for the first time in my life. I actually have a healthy support structure that enables me to be the woman that I want to be or that the woman I'm becoming, you know, and it makes all the difference, you know.
I think you'll do
emotionally and otherwise it helps to have that support structure that enables you to focus on what needs to be focused on, you know. It's a gift to have a mother like mine who can co-parent with me and help me focus on certain things while she does other things. And it's a gift for me to have a man in my life who doesn't put unnecessary stress on me. I don't worry about how he has to behave or how he's not behaving.
Yeah.
You know? I spend all that energy being me and becoming me, you know, and it really helps to have this kind of, you know, environment around you, you know, so, yeah.
No, I think you'll do absolutely well. I really have no doubt in my mind. Like I said, you come across as if, you know, she's on the runway, you know, when a plane is about to take off. You are on a runway. We're just checking things, you know, just checking and putting safety belts on. And, you know, the flight attendant is reading us those things. That's where I see.
So, I better be, because my dreams are big and my plans are massive, and yeah. I'm very determined to execute most of those and to realize a lot of those dreams. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so let's land the plane. Just to continue with the metaphor, let's wrap it up. I cannot. Your followers and your fans will kill me if I don't talk about your relationships. You know, Lerato, I'm old, ne? I'm old, I'm 44. And there was a time where in my life I was very candid and open. You remember, I mean, you come with me from far.
Yeah, remember.
And there's something about age, and not just age, Ifela, but also positioning and branding, where there's certain things you just honestly cannot do anymore because of where you are. So I am living vicariously through you. With your relationships and how open you are about your man and how you want him to call you 10 times a day. When I read your book, what is it about you and sharing such what we would consider very private information? I mean, you get into a relationship, what reports, you break up, you tell us, you cry there, you happy there, you laugh with us there, you tell us about your sex life there. How does that work? How did you come to be this person, which I love?
It's funny because I get asked that so many times. I'm candid about my life, period. You know, it's not a show. It's who I am. You know, I have a very external style of communication. I'm not passive in my expressions. I'm loud. I'm visible. I'm direct. I share my pain. I share my sorrows. I share my wins. I share my joys. You know, even when I was goishing last year, going through that retreat, I was goishing on my wall. I was literally bleeding on my wall. Yeah. I share my journey, you know, and anything outside of this would not be organic. I'm such a storyteller at core, you know, and my life tells a story. You know, I'm a package with a message, and it's funny that sometimes I would be thinking it's just an update, and then there's so many people who come sneaking around the background, just telling me, "Oh my God, you know what? How you have influenced me or inspired me in this area or that area." But for me, I'm just really sharing candid moments about my life. I know that I don't have everything figured out, and I'm not by any means, suggesting that I do. But I think people need to see more of themselves in people. You know, some people tend to think that they live in a bubble, that certain circumstances are unique to them alone. So sometimes it really helps for people to see that, I'm not alone going through this. There's nothing wrong with me for feeling the way that I do. I have a lot of people that come to me in the background to say how much they resonate with a lot of the things that I write about. When I share my healing, I've been sharing my healing journey mentally, you know, and wellness-wise on my social media. And like you said, there will perhaps come a time where all of that won't be necessary anymore. I don't know. But for now, it's really, people should not, and I really don't expect everybody to share. I mean, it hasn't always been positive feedback, by the way. Let me
stress.
I have people who care, who mean well, who come to me and say, "Lerato, don't, you know, you are too oversharing. They are afraid for me, you know, that people, people are going to be too familiar with you, the people will not respect you much, and I understand where that comes from, and honestly, I respect that people really care that much. And in certain instances, yes, I remember one of my good friends actually came to me about one sex post before and said, "This one you have personalized too much. Your knee business should not be a public matter, you know. So you can still talk about sex as a subject, yeah. and inform and educate without making it so personal. Yeah. And I really got that and I took the post down, you know. So you'll find that when it comes to certain matters, just last week, I shared a post about how crazy I was about my boyfriend. And one of the ladies said, nah, when you are not in love anymore, you are stigmatized. And immediately I just said, oh, And immediately I just said, you know what, my man's manhood or private parts are not up for discussion, you know. Yeah. So yeah. I'm not even going to go to a point where I want to explain how I know the sex is this between us or what. Yeah. No, that's yeah. not the angle that I'm pushing for you when I share, you know. So I try now, I'm sober now, I don't share, especially when it includes other people, who yes. either my mom, my sister, or whoever. I'm very yes. careful now when my story is not limited to just me, yes. In terms of what I put out, you yes. know. But if it's something that is completely about me and I'm okay, you know, to tell it, it's my story to tell, I will tell it. And also, I don't blame people, like I said, for being traumatic sometimes, because I think we are addicts. We are trauma addicts. You know, we have a traumatic style of connection. We are attracted to negativity more than yes. positivity. Ooh. And I feel like that needs to change. That is why I make love look beautiful. I don't even do that on purpose, because that's exactly what is happening, you know. Mm. But I feel like we have demonized everything that actually is supposed to be a cornerstone for our freedom. You know, we are not free, you know. Oh. But I don't think we have a constant, like we... I don't think we do it on purpose. It's like we have a constant craving for tragedy, man, and bad news, you know.
Exactly.
Somebody hence would rather have the right to share their horror. Oh, mama has broken my heart and we come and, gosh, oh, men are trash. You know,
yes.
but when Lerato comes and says, oh my gosh, I swear to God, my boyfriend is just the best, you know, we don't want to hear that.
No.
You know, but I don't think we do that. I think we are just projecting our fears, you know, our anxiety, and also we don't know any better. But I think we need to heal that. We need to change that narrative. Ya hore, people shouldn't share good things because retsaba bului or retsaba, you know, to jinx things. Because that's what I've been getting from people. Hore, ooh, when you start sharing, people jealousy and they're going to jinx your things and your things.
Speaking of your nantuewe jealousy and all that, do you feel people are jealous of you sometimes
the thing is that my motive, I think the motive as well, you have to remember that when I share, like I said, I'm not doing this because I'm trying to break or I'm competing against yes. somebody. You know, I feel if maybe my motive was to brag or to compete, maybe I'll be more aware of how I make other people unsettled or whatever. But I don't focus on how I make people feel. For me, it's me being me and having my liberties on my timeline. Mm. I feel you can exercise your liberties in the event that you feel my content is not for you. Mm. Feel free to unsubscribe. You know, nobody's forcing you. You know, you don't have to like my status. You don't have to comment on it. You don't have to follow me. I mean, even offers us to mute somebody if you feel that my status or my posts are
too much
or they're tricky. Then mute me if you feel like my happiness. I'll end up swearing because the Soto is not nice, but I don't want to do that on the podcast, you know. So if you feel like my happiness or my energy right now, as opposed to how I was when I was broken or bleeding, you don't enjoy it, you can mute me, you know.
Yeah.
You can unfriend me, you can block me. If you don't relate, you don't have to like and you don't have to comment. It's not by force. And I don't do it for likes either.
Yeah.
So that's not my reward. You know, my reward is not really the likes and the comments.
Yeah.
You know? And funny enough, my man is the opposite of me. He doesn't share.
At all.
You know, at all, you know. And funny enough, do you know that we follow each other on all social media platforms? So he sees my posts. It's not like he doesn't. He sees them, and he doesn't try to stop me, because all he knows is that I'm me. you know, so the moment he says, don't talk or don't, he knows that I won't be me because he knows that that's who I am. I love loud. I'm external in my expression. You know, there are people who can contain joy. Motabe excited, but, you know, inside, but you can, you know, but now I'm the person that, you know, get like a somersault and unhappy. So I'm very external in my way of expressing. So I'm not saying people should all be like me, you know, and I also expect that those people who are physically put together in terms of how they express their emotions should also not be too harsh or judgmental towards people like me. Who, you know, who do the somersaults physically when they're excited. You know, that's who I am.
Yeah, no, but you said a mouthful, especially about us being attracted to traumatic things or very sad stories. I mean, I can write a book alone on all that using my own wall. Back in the days when we used to have, we've got mail with all those traumatic stories from anonymous people. It was hectic. But the moment one is moving on and growing and bringing soberish content, it's like waiting arobatlang umung olang. And it also makes me think of the recent case of Malaika, Malaika Mahlatsi, when she had that drama of the breakup, how it trended for days because it was a downfall of some sort.
Actually, we love drama.
Yeah, no, we like it.
Oh, we love drama. We love drama. Like we are so attracted to drama. It's so bad, you know. And I don't think we do it intentionally. Subconsciously.
No, it's not intentional. Definitely, it's not.
We're craving for drama. You know, so much so that the moment I was level Gary well put together and in harmony. You know, positive vibes, or vibrate, like a positive energy, or a bore.
Yeah, no, you ignore me. You ignore people who are fine. But like, it's like a story.
Waiting for the day I thought,
No, I do have those. I do have those. I'm not well put together. I do have those, but I reserve it for my safe spaces. Remember I told you earlier,
that's what I'm saying, Gary, on our wall. The day Otota Ore, who plus one, I just found out what I've been quiet. But I'm here to come out. I'm breaking the silence. Hore plus one has been abusive. Otro Banale by Long Hore. For a long time, they have not been commenting. They are going to comment. That's how attractive we find drama. I'm telling you,
Oscar. Yeah, I know.
You will even feel as if we have been waiting for the day you come.
Exactly. No, there are posts where I feel like how, you know, where a post just immediately catches fire. And like, gosh, are we really those people? Please, can we no longer be those people? So I'm not going to feed that monster. I don't care who says what. I am not feeding the drama, trauma monster. I have gone past that stage. I am over all that. So, lekampelang padi 2 likes, I have moved on. We are now in teaching and healing spaces, which is.
And I leave that here, jealousy, ya hore, oh, but to ban jealous, it's about your lawyer or they're going to jinx my things, you know? So, it just for me symbolizes hore, you are when you do your things. You are such a free spirit, you know?
No, I've never, so in all my. In all my
motive of what you do.
No, I've never had that thing of people are jealous of me. I've never had haters. That's why you can search my posts from Khale. You'll never find me talking about haters or people are jealous of me because that's not where my focus is. I'm not saying they're not me, but that's the problem. You know, there's nothing to do with me. But Lerato, we have reached, can you believe we have reached 2 hours from when we began, before we hit record. And I know you have a meeting. I have a 2:30 class. I'm teaching at 2:30, basically in an hour, and I need to sit and prep for it. So I'm going to say goodbye and say thank you for you, for being you. I think you're on the runway, my friend. I think people are climbing your train, your plane. It's Lotsamaya Isekhale, and you are flying very, very far. So brace yourself and love yourself and take care of yourself, man. We talk and do your thing. Definitely. Do your thing. The support is there. I'm here for you. And yeah, you will come back here on the podcast for something else, I'm sure.
We do always have different platforms. Remember, you once hosted me on Stretch as well.
Yes, yes, I remember as a guest. Yeah.
I'm sure we somewhere, somehow, there will be another reconnection on either platform, you know? So, yeah, thank you very much for having me on your podcast series.
Yeah, guys, that is Lerato for you. Candid, deep, generous, calm, and energetic at the same time. She does that paradox well, hey? She comes across very calm in terms of her tone, but there's a lot of energy behind it, if you know what I'm trying to say. If you picked up these things, because I pick up these things. So that was the episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Do give us feedback. Please do use that voice note. Kali Kupa. Do. We have it for you on the Stretch Podcast site, which is www.stretchpodcast.co.za. Make use of it. It would be really nice to hear from you what your thoughts are on the episodes that we are doing. I personally am beginning to warm up and relax around conversations or interviewing people. Let me tell you something. You know, when you listen to your favorite podcaster having a conversation with somebody, or your favorite radio show host having a conversation with somebody, and you can't even get out of your car because the conversation is so amazing, let me tell you, the host is making it look easy because the host has done a lot of work behind. The easier it sounds, the harder it is. That is the rule of thumb. In anything, if you see someone do something and it looks easy, trust me, it's because it's very, very hard. They've put a lot behind the craft. That is the rule of thumb. So I'm loving that I am relaxing around it and I'm becoming comfortable. But why? Guess why? Because I'm learning a lot. I'm reading a lot. I'm adjusting every week. I try and adjust. Every week I try to hold back and have restraint. Yeah, it's these things are interesting. And what's interesting with this one is that it's like dancing. I'm learning to dance and dancing at the same time and performing at the same time on stage, because I'm doing this right in front of you. I'm learning right there with you. Oh my God. I do enjoy my life and I do enjoy what I do. So give us feedback. Give me feedback of how you are finding the episodes with guests, so that we can then play your voice note. You know, don't be shy, guys. We're just a family, like I said. You go to the site www.stretchpodcast.co.za. Next week, I will see you with yet another guest of the Stretch Podcast. Incredible woman again. Incredible topic. And an important one. So you don't want to miss that. But for now, I want to wish you love and all green lights, as always. And as I promised, we are getting out with Lerato's song, A Niger Saudi Affair.